to really see results, and we begin to really understand our power and to amplify it.
So to just riff a little bit more on this point, how do you both see this struggle against racism and fascism playing out in the coming period, and what labor unions can and should do?
The labor movement needs to show our power and be willing to go to war with capitalists. Otherwise, I think we're going to lose a lot of people to the appeal of fascism. We need to prepare now for how we will go on strike to protect ourselves and our communities, because the neoliberal hegemony will not offer a serious alternative to the rightward push, and uncoordinated street actions will only get us so far. When we look at historical examples, like I mentioned earlier, of when the labor movement changed society, like in the early 20th century, we can see that it's up to militant unionists to pave the way forward.
Thoughts, Chad?
Yeah, again, Laura hit it right on the head, I think. And I think, of course, now, today, we have to find whichever avenues we can, as small as they may be, and as unillustrious as they may seem, to affect as much change as we can in the here and now, because I think what we do today either widens or narrows the avenues of tomorrow, and I think that's always the case.
How can our listeners connect with your organizations and find out more information?
You can visit the Portland DSA Labor Working Group website at tinyurl.com/pdxdsalabor, or you can email us at portlanddsalabor@gmail.com.
Jan?
You can find the Unemployed Workers Council at the various social media websites. So at Twitter, we are at UWCPDX. And we're also UWCPDX on Instagram. And on Facebook, we are facebook.com/UWCPDX. And through all those channels, we post information about upcoming meetings as well as events that we're participating in.
Well, that wraps
so
it up.
So the Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday, 6 to 6:30 p.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM. You've been listening to Laura Waldman, Jad Zayad, members of Portland DSA and Labor for Black Lives, Labor Against Fascism. I'm Amanda Hill with Jamie Partridge. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, this is Emma with Prison Pipeline. Before we get started on tonight's show, I want to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't at the station right now to take your calls, but you can show your support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. You can also make a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
Okay. Are you able to hear me fine?
Yes, yes, I can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Okay, okay.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. And we are talking tonight with Quan Nguyen, who is an author and an educator, and does specific outreach to folks who are incarcerated. Welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Kwan, first of all, let's talk about you a little bit. First of all, can you share your story with us? Tell us a little bit about who are you and what do you do?
Sure. I work as the post-release program manager for DeFi Ventures. It's a nonprofit that helps transform the lives of men and women with criminal histories through the journey of entrepreneurship. We bring our program into prison to share the lessons of entrepreneurship. But in these lessons of entrepreneurship is where we get the program participants to basically get a shift in their mindsets. I'm also a program graduate. I started with DeFi Ventures when I was still doing a life sentence in prison back in 2015. And then I stayed with the program after I was paroled from a life sentence and created my first company 6 months after that. And now I'm on board as a program staff.
Congratulations on your release and your involvement in this program. Can you tell me, where were you incarcerated?
Yes, I was incarcerated in California. So I've done a total of 22 years of my life in and out of correctional institutions since I was 17. And I ultimately went to prison for murder in 1999. I was given a 15-year life sentence for second-degree murder. In the state of California, that was basically considered a death sentence as they were not paroling any life-term prisoners. All the way up until about 2007 is when they first started paroling some, or there were some rulings that came down that said that they had to start paroling some people. But it took quite a while. Even to this day, it's still not an easy feat to go to a parole board and get found suitable, but at least there's a chance for people to go home now.
And how were you introduced while you were incarcerated to this program that you've become involved in now?
Well, by the time the light came on for me, I became like a sponge and I just wanted to get involved with any programs that had wanted to do with self-help or self-improvement. On the flip side, I've always been very fascinated with business. I was a bookworm, so I love reading business books. I love reading personal development books. So when it was announced that it was a pilot program coming, they said what the program was about, I just realized, oh man, this is perfectly complements my journey and what I want to learn. So I signed right on board.
That's great. So you had been incarcerated for almost 20 years by that?
Total of my life, 22 years. On this last case, by that time when I joined, I was probably in prison at that time, probably about 15 years already, close to 16. Yeah.
But you're still, I mean, I can tell just by looking at you're still a young guy. So you must have had a lot of energy and curiosity about your future.
Well, I would have to say the first 10, 12 years, I did not. I thought I was going to die in there. I never thought I was really going to get to go home. It was after, I think I was around 35, 36 or something, and I began questioning myself, like, am I meant to die in here? Is this what my life is meant to be? And I was contrasting my own life compared to my father, who had died when he was 38 from leukemia. I was a little boy. And then I just remember, you know, like, how did my father make such a big impact in this world? And then I contrasted that with how much pain and death and destruction that I had brought to the world. And at the time, I was also reading quite a bit of books on personal development and things like that. And then they led me somehow on to books on the saints, which I became fascinated with, especially saints that... the stories on saints where they had their own failures and I realized these were not perfect human beings also, and those stories resonated with me. And then I just began to ask myself questions like, why can't I make myself a better person even if I'm supposed to die in here? And the answer was I could. And so I've given some talks on it why when that morning when I realized, yes, I can make myself better, even if I'm supposed to die, and I was standing out on the prison yard. The sun was barely coming up, and I could feel the warmth from it. On the individual blades of grass, I saw the drops of dew, and up above me in the razor wire, I heard a sparrow chirping. And I tell people it had probably been chirping my whole term, and I never heard it. But that day I heard it, and that day prison just did not feel like punishment to me anymore. It became like a place where I could begin to connect with other human beings, and begin to be a place where I looked at as, like, every morning I woke up, it was like with curious wonder, like, what can I discover about myself today? Or what can I find to make myself a better person? Or what does God have in store for me? And it was, that was how I approached each day. And at each night before I went to sleep, then I could journal about my day, my discoveries, like where I failed, but saying failed in the sense like, it's okay, like this is a journey of self-forgiveness and self-acceptance and, you know, how do I make amends? And so all these tied in together. Yeah, and it's just a journey of personal responsibility, which then realizing that I had a choice in all this, and I had a choice to choose my freedom. And so, like, I guess that's part of why my book is about how did I come to my own sense of freedom, like, years before I paroled. Like, I was felt liberated inside, even if I was technically supposed to die in there. And then suddenly I go to the parole board in 2015, and they told me, you know, we don't feel that you're a threat to society anymore. And that's when I was paroled. In prison, because, like, you know, they'll have different programs. People, you'll have volunteers come in, like a couple volunteers to for this workshop or a couple volunteers for that one. When DeFi came in, they had a huge cohort of us. There were like 70, 80 of us that had signed up. And then they said, okay, the program's gonna be in the gym. We're gonna bring in some people. Little did I know, they brought about 50 or 60 entrepreneurs in the tech and venture capitalist space inside the gym with us to talk about our resumes, our personal statements, our business plans. Let's say out here, you know, if you go to hot yoga and it's all stifling and hard to breathe and you're sweaty, and then suddenly when that door opens and all that cool fresh air comes in, that's the only way I can describe it. That's how it felt, seeing like all these volunteers come in with all their colorful clothes, who are used to just seeing prison blues, smiling faces, and it's just a breath of fresh air. And then just realizing, you know, there's actual people that believe in second chances and people that...
Quan, can you tell me about your book, The Sparrow and the Razor Wire?
Yeah, Sparrow and the Razor Wire is written for men that are doing long or life-term sentences. In it, I'm sharing with them how I spiraled into my own journey of darkness, going and getting involved with the gangs and going into prison. But then how did I slowly find my way back out, and ultimately finding like my own freedom and liberation years before I paroled from the life sentence.
How did you first get involved with these, with the groups that like ended up getting you incarcerated? And then how did you find your way out?
Well, my father passed away when I was 13. And basically I never really grieved his death. I grew up in Provo, Utah. And when his condition got worse, we moved out here to California. But in Utah, I never felt like I fit in. We were the only Vietnamese family over there. And then when we came out here to California, there was also a part of me that did not feel like I fit in, even though this is the first time I went to school with Hispanics, Vietnamese, and Black kids. But I also did not feel like I fit in because like the Vietnamese kids did, a large majority of them did not speak English well. I did not speak Vietnamese well, so I stuck out in that way. So there was always a part of me that never felt like I fit in, and I was always seeking acceptance somewhere. And the gangs provided that part for me. So like I shared, I was arrested the first time when I was 17. Came out even worse, heavily involved with gangs. And yeah, that just became a long road of thinking that this is finally where I belong for once. But I really didn't. It was just where I found my sense of acceptance inside that gang. And then even inside prison, thinking, okay, this is where my place is with the Asians inside prison, the ones that are involved with gangs, and it just continued like that.
So some of your experience with being incarcerated had to do with first getting involved with gangs, where you felt a sense of connection and a sense of community, and you haven't had that sense of community within prison, which is a fairly common story that people have when they experience incarceration.
But yet, later on, when the light came on, I realized, especially when I began my process of transformation, I go, this is my community here. It's not just in this little corner with just my race or with just these gang members. This whole community is part of our community. So how can I make an impact? How can I make this world a better place for us in here? And that's kind of how I approached it. You know, I was inspired by these stories of the saints of wanting to make an impact in the world. So my mission or journey was, how can I make an impact on this prison yard in this little forgotten corner of the world? How can I still make an impact? And we did. I saw like the men that that were involved with me in creating groups and being involved with the groups that we were doing. We were able to change the culture of the prison yard from, like, you know, one of violence and hatred and anger to one of, you know, community and building each other up and accepting each other's, you know, differences. So that's the only way I could describe it when it came later on for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Emma. I just want to take a quick break from this interview to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't at the station to take your call, but you can support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or you can also make the contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You mentioned to me at the beginning of the interview, before we got a chance to get started when we were chatting, you mentioned that you do some workshops, I guess in part based on your book and also in part based on the work that you do with Defy Ventures. So can you tell me a little bit about the workshops that you offer, and are these available for people who are incarcerated in Oregon?
Defy Ventures is not in Oregon right now. It's a 7-month program. It's called the CEO of Your New Life. And it's offered to men or women that are incarcerated. And they go through cohorts of about 40 to 50 people at a time. And they are given, you know, entrepreneurship is the carrot that we dangle for people to come through the door. But about 60 to 70% of the coursework is character and personal development. And then there's business classes and entrepreneurship classes in between peppered inside it. The halfway point is called a business coaching day, where that's when we bring volunteers in from the tech and venture capitalist space for a lot of times, or a lot of entrepreneurs that'll come in for, it's a high energy event, empathy exercise. It's an all day event, and it's just basically finding commonality, even though these are people that are outside connecting with people that are on the inside. There's a lot of shared commonality. Then at the 7-month mark, the graduation culminates in a business pitch competition that is judged Shark Tank style. The volunteers are also serving as judges, and it's really fun. I miss being able to go into prison, you know, because once I came home, I used to go back in quite often for our events. Once they come home, then that's where they go into what's called our post-release program, where we have a community of volunteers already that's ready to support them. We have employment partnerships. We have reentry referrals that we could set them up for housing, for documents, for other challenges that they will inevitably face. Then we have workshops that we do at Defy post-release, workshops on rebuilding credit after reentry, workshops on technology basics, because some of them have been away 15, 20, 25 years. Workshops on etiquette and networking, continued career coaching night. So now we get them to, okay, now you're home, let's build your resume, let's get you coached up, do some mock interviews so that you can get set up for success. Our numbers are fantastic. As I'm sure you know, like the employment numbers for people coming back from reentry, I think it's unemployment is very high in this population. I think some studies we've seen where at the 1 year mark, 60% of people are still unemployed. For at DeFi, at the 90-day mark, we have right now, we're very proud to say 84% of our program graduates are employed already by the 90-day mark. Our recidivism numbers right now, the return of rate to prison at the 1 year mark is at 7.2%. As you know, some studies, they have it up as high as 2 out of 3 people will go back to prison. I think at least 50% within the first year upon release. So yeah, I get to still make an impact out here and to help basically my brothers and sisters that are coming home in their reentry journey.
It sounds like a great program. So when you were doing your business plan with DeFi Ventures, when you were still incarcerated, I'm curious, what was your business plan? What were you gonna propose to the...
So when I was in prison, I was involved with quite a few groups. One in particular was called the Alternatives to Violence Project. And we ran like 3-day workshops to explore like how to communicate effectively. What does violence mean? How do we build community? So there were all these things that we used to do in that. And I loved being involved with those workshops, but I saw the impact of how we were able to change the culture of a prison yard. And then like there were, you know, part of feedback and team building, and these were all lessons that I saw that we were doing in there. And I felt they could also be applied to the corporate world out here. So my pitch inside was basically running workshops for middle-level managers on how to communicate effectively with their teams, how to give feedback in a way that builds up teams instead of tears them down. I coined this term called gift giving, and that's how you give gifts to your team to build them up. That was my pitch while I was still inside. I remember that one.
That sounds great, Quan. So have you had a chance since you've been out of prison to try to do this kind of training with people in the business world? It's a great idea. You're talking about taking skills that you learned while you were in prison to change the prison yard into a positive environment. It sounds like those would be great skills for people in the business world to be able to effectively use with their employees. Have you had a chance to do this?
I actually, at the national gathering for ABP, I led a whole breakout session on how to properly give and receive feedback. So I did, that was a part of a breakout session. I used those same skills and used those same strategies and concepts that we used inside in DeFi events out here when we have our community events out here. It was funny because when I first came home, I was still pitching that. And there was a team from Google that was very interested in what I was saying, what I was pitching. But then I remember I was speaking to one of the directors, and she just said, you know, the only problem is that, and she said this respectfully in a way, she said, but you're not an authority. There's no relevance to you. You don't have any blog posts. There's no book behind you. Like you're not an authority in this field. Like, who are you to show? Only just your prison journey. You have to build up something so that we could pitch this to our team, because I guess a lot of, but that's something at the back of my mind. That's something that I am going to create one day still. So, and then now I have a book. So maybe I am a little bit relevant to say, hey, you know, I'm an authority to say some of these things that I wanted to share with the world.
I hope that this interview, as well as your work individually, like moves you closer toward that goal. Cause I think it's a really, with your book, what are you hoping to do now with your book? When was your book released, and where would you like to see your book go?
Tuesday, September 15th. So where I would like my book to go is in part of like some of our DeFi events, and there are these coaches that say, what is your grand goal? What is your goal by 2030? And one they had challenged me in one. And 2030 goal, I just said, I would like to be able to say that I got my book into every prison in the United States. How I'm gonna do that, I don't know, but I'll figure it out. I mean, our principles at DeFi is about entrepreneurship. And like I shared with you on the call earlier, it's weird because suddenly somebody, a person that's on the mailing list, my mailing list for my website, asked me one day, do I have a way to get my books into Oregon prisons? Because she specifically wants to donate to prisons in Oregon because she has a home in Oregon. And then she wants to donate also to prisons in Hawaii because she also has a home in Hawaii. So then I said, I don't have a connection for that, but I think I can figure it out. Once it is, then we'll see how we can get these books into different prisons. So I guess slowly it's gonna go, because there were people that were on my mailing list that have been receiving chapters and updates about my book, have reached out, and we had to create a web landing page just so people could order in bulk to donate into prison. So I think at present we're already up to 700 books that are going to go inside prison. So I go, oh man, I get to make an impact on hopefully 700 lives in some way. And then I know prison culture, men share books. And so I'm sure the women's culture also, people just share books in there. So if they like a book, they share it. I've had quite a few people that were formerly incarcerated read the book, tell me that this would definitely make an impact on the guys in there. This would definitely get them to re-examine and or question maybe a lot of the narrative that they have been telling themselves, and possibly and hopefully challenge them to, you know, find their freedom through taking, you know, personal responsibility in their lives and understanding how they have the freedom to choose. And I think once they realize that, and that they're not a victim, and that they don't have to blame everybody, they can just own, yes, I made a mistake, or yes, I made this terrible choice, or, you know, like even my wife, like, yes, I shot and killed a living, breathing human being, but how did I come to my sense of freedom? I think they can do that too.
We're speaking tonight with Quan Hinn, who is the author of the book, The Sparrow and the Razor Wire. We're almost at the end of the interview, Quan. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you'd still like to share that I haven't asked?
No, I think I just like to thank you for helping me get the message out. So yeah, I mean, like if there are perhaps, you know, organizations or foundations that may be interested in helping me achieve the mission of getting these books into prison, then yeah, then I'd love for them to reach out to me on my website or something. That would be, you know, because like I said, the book is written for men that are in prison, but they are not my customers. And I don't feel right marketing to the families of the incarcerated. So I felt the best way I could do this is to start donating books through book sales and matching it. So that's the only way I can think of doing it right now. But yeah, so if there's other people that have other ways of getting it in, I would love to be able to connect with them.
Speaking tonight with Quan Nguyen, the author of the book, The Sparrow and the Razor Wire, and your book released on September 15th. Where can people find your book if they're looking for it?
They can find it right on Amazon. They could go to my website, or they go right to Amazon. It's also on Audible. It's also on Kindle. So Barnes & Noble, I mean, they could just look it up.
And what is your website, Quan?
My website is www.quanxhuyen.com. I could type that in the chat for you. But they could go there, or they could just go to sparrowandtherazorwire.com.
Okay, sparrowandtherazorwire.com.
That's probably easier because sparrowandtherazorwire.com will also point them to my website.
Thank you. We've been talking tonight with Quan Nguyen, who was incarcerated for 22 years and got involved in a program called DeFi Ventures, which introduced him to the entrepreneurs and did workshops that helped to really turn his life around. And it sounds like you're on a really great direction now with your life. good luck with everything that you're doing in the future.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today on Prison Pipeline, and have a good evening.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
BOO, Portland.